This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. It's Friday, the 17th of September. Yay, Friday!
Yay!
And you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, together with Philip C. Moving swiftly to markets, how did they do, Philip?
Oh, very mixed. You know, in the US, it was mixed. The Dow and S&P 500 was down 0.2%. The Nasdaq was up 0.1%. Across in Asia, the Nikkei down 0.6%. Hang Seng down 1.5%. Shanghai also negative at down 1.3%. But Singapore was up 0.2%. But in Malaysia, FBM KLCA was closed for Malaysia Day.
Yay. And US was a bit soft, partially because options expire tomorrow. So there's usually a flurry of volume and a bit of uncertainty. Certain trade. But in terms of where global markets are heading, we speak to Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP. Good morning, Carlos. I think we'll start with US retail sales because that's the hottest figure out there. So registered strong numbers in August. Can export-reliant countries in Asia benefit from this growth momentum despite the global supply chain issues and the spread of Delta variant in the region, though?
Hi, good morning. Yes, so we are seeing a mixed signs in the US economy. I think everyone has started to understand that. On the consumption front, however, the numbers were better than expected. And we saw the mirror image of that with Chinese exports being stronger than expected as well in August. So, of course, there are a number of economies in Asia that are export-oriented, and they will benefit from sustained demand from the US for a little bit longer, especially as we are seeing a bit of sluggishness for China. And typically for these countries, the number one export market will be the US and China, or China and the US. So sustained demand in the US is definitely helping to keep things afloat. But do keep in mind that we expect to see maturing demand in the US as we sort of exit the sort of post-COVID reopening peak in demand and activity, and we enter a more normal phase of the US economy.
I mean, you were mentioning about China's data just now, right? Relatively mixed. So does this adjust your GDP growth outlook then?
So on the China data front, I would like to highlight three things. Of course, the data was more negative than expected over the board. That has an implication on GDP. But the most important thing to keep in mind was that consumption was much slower than expected. So it was 2.5%, and it was expected to come out at 7%, and it was 8.5% in July. So we saw a marked slowdown in consumption in August. There are a number of reasons for this. Of course, there are seasonal factors and other base effects, but most importantly, consumption was affected by lockdown surrounding COVID-19, heavy rain in China, and also weaker consumer confidence because we saw all of that market volatility in August. So households might have suffered from wealth effects associated with a sell-off in equities. So that was one thing to keep an eye out, the weaker consumption data. There's an outbreak in Fujian, so we expect September numbers will be weak as well. So that will have an implication on growth as well. On the unemployment front, 5.1%. This number is very stable in China, but what is interesting is that youth unemployment, which is trending in China right now, that was actually still quite high, around 15%. So they do have to focus on addressing youth unemployment going forward, if they want to pursue this more equitable approach to growth. And the last thing is on the property front, we saw investment declining slightly and also housing prices coming down. So that is an indication that they are going to start tackling the housing problem in the coming months, which of course suggests there's going to be a little bit more pressure on growth there as well, because the housing sector accounts for about 20 to 25% of Chinese GDP, both directly and indirectly. So it's a huge chunk of the economy, it's a huge sector in the economy. So we personally have not adjusted our GDP growth forecasts, but the reason for that is we have already factored this weakness into our assumption. We expect that growth will decline to 2.5% only in Q3 before stabilizing in Q4. And that will mean that for the whole year, growth will come in around 8.2% or slightly above, which is significantly lower than a previous consensus of 8.6%. Keep in mind, though, that most of the banks still have 5 to 6% growth in Q3. So we do expect to see market practitioners revising their expectations for China down as a result of this weaker than expected data.
And Carlos, you mentioned property and its significance to the China's economy. I want to draw your attention to, of course, this Evergrande story, which seems to get messier by the day, and we are having protests at some of their offices. I'm just curious whether you think this might have a contagion, in fact, not only on the property sector, but the banking sector, if there's any possibility of defaults.
Right, correct. So we are seeing a lot of negative headlines around the news with Evergrande. The next imminent deadline is September 23 and 29. So they have coupon repayments, but bonds are not due until 2022. So that will be really the key to see whether or not we have more of a default there. However, the company has been subject to some liquidity constraints, and a lot of headlines have been focusing on that story, with it being unable to pay some of its suppliers, and that having an impact on its ability to deliver ongoing housing projects on time, on schedule. And that has naturally translated into some spillover into the real estate sector. So we are already seeing that in the markets. You can look at the spread between China high yield names versus investment grade names. So typically high yields capturing a much larger share of real estate developers. And that spread has widened a lot as the market is starting to prepare for difficult times ahead, as they also plan to tackle this sector. Our current view is still that the authorities will want to be involved in guiding the restructuring, as it does pose some systemic fragilities. So not only because the banking sector, as you've mentioned, is exposed to debt from this company, but if it does spill over more broadly, then there are other sectors that have stress in debt payment. And our data suggests that the banking sector, for example, has more stress or worse debt problems than the housing sector. And some consumer services, such as the aviation sector, are still struggling with some of the sort of COVID-19 impacts. So a broader contagion to the broader economy would mean much more defaults in many other sectors that might be unexpected. So they will want to guide the restructuring. The real risk here is in case there's a mistake or an oversight in that process that leads to a messy bankruptcy. That would be the main mistake. But as I mentioned, the likelihood of that happening, given the structure of the Chinese economy and what is at stake, is rather small at this juncture. But we will know more in the coming weeks and in 2022 with that bond maturity coming up.
And Carlos, let's shift to Southeast Asia, but let's talk about inflation. You know, we've always talked about inflation in Europe and the US, but now with economies reopening in the likes of Thailand and Malaysia, how big would be the inflationary impact? Mm-hmm.
So the main reason we don't talk about inflation in the same way that we talk about inflation in the US and Europe is that so far throughout this post-pandemic sort of reopening, quote unquote, a lot of Asia still remains in the lockdown, has been, inflation in Asia has not been a problem. And much of the reason, as you mentioned, is that Asia is just going to take that much longer to reopen because, 60% of the population and 30% of the landmass, they have to adopt a more cautious approach towards reopening compared to other parts of the world. As we see some reopening, we are starting to see some inflation on the demand side, but more likely what is driving those upticks in inflation in places like Malaysia, but we also have relatively high inflation in India and also in the Philippines, is imported inflation or inflation resulting from supply shortages as a result of COVID-19. So that factor, in my opinion, is a bigger driver of inflation going forwards. And of course, that is only a transitory factor that is impacting inflation. So as we enter the first half of 2022, we should see some degree of downside pressure on inflation in those markets, which will leave a little bit more room open for those economies to breathe, for the central banks to consider their monetary policies, etc.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP, giving us his views on the global market, particularly actually an interesting conversation on China from the, you know, from a data perspective, and also what kind of contagion effect Evergrande could have on the broader economy?
I mean, China's Evergrande's junk bonds contribute 17% of total junk bonds in Asia Pacific. So it has a very large contribution, right, to the overall system. But, you know, we are seeing how the Chinese government intervene already by even telling lenders that don't expect them to pay, and they're getting regulators in to do the evaluations and restructuring. So I do think that China is starting to make sure that it's going to be a smooth process in managing this Evergrande, because we've seen protests taking place across cities.
Yeah, but the contagion risk is, you know, was on full display apparently on Thursday. So like you say, Chinese junk bond yields jumped to an 18-month high, and shares of real estate companies plunged after Evergrande had its credit rating downgraded and actually requested a trading halt in its onshore bonds. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.